Hello, my babies, and welcome to Poker in the Ears. I'm Uncle Daddy Joe Stapleton. I am in Las Vegas. He is my work wife, James Hardigan.
And to follow on from the cliffhanger that was the closer of last week's episode, I am still in LA, but cases are packed, and I will be heading to Vegas in a few hours.
And of course, we are risking jail time with our co-host, considering DEI is now illegal. Please welcome to the show, Caitlin Kameski. Caitlin, we are risking life and limb by giving a woman a job.
No, I'm scared to be here. I'm frightened. We might be jailed by the end of the week, but at least I don't think they can deport me for this, though.
They might try. Coming up on today's show, boy, do we have some news. You can probably hear it in my voice. I am giddy with excitement. What news? Well, the funny part is that how this podcast works is that you either likely already know the news or it's actually not going to be news and we can't tell you about it yet or possibly ever, because why would we ever get to break any news on our own podcast?
I would say that it is one of the limitations of being a pre-recorded show, which has a kind of 24-hour gap between when it's recorded and when it goes out.
Yes. So it is our WSOP 2025 preview show. And unlike the past decade or so, James and I are going to be spending more days / weeks / months at the World Series of Poker than we have done in a long, long time.
Why, Joe?
Because PokerStars is somehow partnering with PokerGo to present live coverage of the World Series of Poker in this 2025 year of our Lord, which means that between now and mid-July, you will be able to watch final tables of around a dozen bracelet events and the first few days of the WSOP main event on the PokerStars YouTube channel.
Check's calendar, not huge. April 1st. Must be real.
It is real. So joining us today to help us make heads or tails of all this WSOP, PokerGo, all everything going on, we have got a PokerGo stalwart, one of the voices of the WSOP, Brent Hanks, is going to be with us.
Also a PokerGo executive. Let's give the guy the credit he deserves.
Brent is...
He's also kind of hot. I don't want to like disrespect anyone, but he's pretty good looking. Me and my girlfriends, when we talk about like the cutest guys in poker, it's like a list of two guys and it's Nick Schulman and Brent Hanks. I don't know if that's unprofessional, but I already said it. The cat's out of the bag.
I think it's fine. We're all human beings, Caitlin. We're all sexual beings. It's okay to have feelings.
We all have loins.
That's right. So before we move on to the world of live poker for the next 6 weeks, it's time to draw a line under the spring championship of online poker. So Howard Swains will be with us one last time to close out the scoop tab of 2025. And Superfan versus Stapes is back and bringing it home for this season is Ben Godbout. And the subject is the movie The Sandlot. Real quick, I'll talk more about The Sandlot when we get there.
Yeah.
But I was fucking so delighted to revisit this movie. This movie is a 10 out of 10 from my childhood. I was choked up with nostalgia and emotion watching this movie. So I'm just in such a good mood having watched it over the last 2 days.
I'm glad. It's a movie I've never watched. I'm going to be honest with you. Until it was suggested as a superfan subject, I didn't think I'd even heard of it.
I was going to say, James, this is one that I... Caitlin, have you seen it?
Yeah, I mean, it's part of those like 90s baseball movies. We had like Angels in the Outfield. We had a few of them. Stand By Me is kind of in that genre.
It's very Stand By Me-ish. It's like a more kids version of Stand By Me. James, I know baseball won't really resonate with you. Actually, you liked baseball.
No,
didn't
I
you,
do.
When you were
I
young?
Mean, and growing up as a kid, the Bad News Bears, the original version, was one of my favorite movies. So had I been aware of this, it definitely would have been a movie I sought out. I'm going to guess that because of the subject matter, it probably didn't get a big release in Europe in 1993.
Yeah, it is magical. I think it is a perfect kids movie. Of course, because it was made in the 90s, there's like one little problematic scene in it potentially. But other than that, it is a fucking delight. So I can't wait. And I think I might have nailed this quiz, by the way, even without rewatching it, because that's how deeply ingrained in my brain this movie is.
Look, before we go any further, can we just react to this news that we've just done at the top of the show. I've been referring to this summer as the great summer of uncertainty because there were so many moving parts.
How many months did we know this was maybe going to happen?
We were definitely talking about it at the Irish Open. So we've known about this from end of March, early April. But here's the thing, and this is why I want to just kind of take a step back and just acknowledge how crazy this is. With the World Series of Poker under new ownership, and we know who those owners are, I never dreamed in a million years that we, PokerStars, would have anything official to do with the World Series ever again. And then this
came
onto our radars.
Yesterday when I was walking through, I walked in the horseshoe and I immediately found myself in the middle of Daniel's vlog. Like I somehow just stepped right into his opening vlog and he made a final table last night. And he and I ended up walking down the hallway and talking about this. And he was like, "What the fuck are you doing here?" And I was like, "I don't know. I don't know how I got here. This is way above my pay grade. Like, people, like, I'm blown away. People are going to be blown away by this."
Yeah. So it is happening. And the weird part is, even though the prospect was on our agenda, the reality only became a thing this week. Like, within the last few hours have we been given the green light that it's happening. So now we're kind of scrambling. And understandably, in the meantime, there's a few commitments. Do you know what? We'll get into it later on. But we're going to make it happen. We're going to make it work. And we'll go through the details a bit later on. Caitlin, how has your week been? What's going on with you?
I took a last minute trip to go sit by my dad's bed. I have an older father, so he's having some medical issues. So I spent the weekend in the hospital just like chilling with him and making sure he wasn't.
What a sweet person and good daughter you are to go sit with your dad. My God.
It's mostly just me like cursing at him, telling him to behave in front of the nurses because Exactly. No, I'm definitely my dad's daughter, but yeah, been a little bit of a rough weekend, but I'm back here and glad to be back with my work boys.
I mean, it really puts things into perspective how important poker is, doesn't it, Caitlin?
I know, honestly, like I really thought it was about family, but it's actually about doing more work in less amount of time.
So you're not heading to Vegas yet, right? You've got something back in New Jersey first.
Yes. So we've got the Summer Stacks, which is the June series that we do here in the Poker Stars North American liquidity pool. So if you're in Michigan, New Jersey, or Pennsylvania, I hope you join me this weekend. June 6th is going to be the kickoff, and we're going to have poker from June 6th through the 23rd. It's going to culminate in a main event that has $110,000 guarantee. That's a $100 buy-in event. That's going to be on Red Spade Sunday, June 22nd. I'm going to be streaming the first week of the series, and then I'll head to WSOP on June 12th. And I thought that I was going to have a nice, luxurious poker grinding trip, but then Joe had this lovely surprise that, surprise, you get to work the whole time. Poker Stars is collaborating with Poker Go, and you're our talent lackey, so saddle up, honey.
I'm super excited to do commentary with you, Caitlin. The thing is that maybe the trick you haven't learned yet that the other team pros have picked up on is that if you're constantly in an event, that gets you out of commentary duty. So all I would say is you better run hot or be prepared to come chop it up with me and Hardigan during the 1.1K RAS limit bus station 7-hour final table stream.
I was going to say, your
options are...
Honestly,
I would be delighted to do commentary with y'all on the mixed games because I finally understand how all the stud games work. I know how many...
Great.
Yeah,
perfect.
I've been playing a lot of 8-game on my stream just to, you know, like, yak it up and have variety for the viewers. And because, you know, it's a smaller liquidity pool. There's not a ton to play, so I like to mix it up and do some change-up events. We have change-up events every night at, I believe, 9 p.m., and that, like, rotates between 8-game, Raz, stud. That high low. I'm not very good at the split pot games yet. I struggle to read the board, but we're getting there. I know what the starting hands should look like in all the different games.
Perfect.
So we're making progress little by little.
We're definitely going to need your input. Definitely going to need your contribution because I think there is a 9-game event on the schedule for these live streams. But yeah, your options if you want to stay out of the booth are either run deep, fire multiple bullets, or enter random tournaments that you had no intention of playing.
No dailies, by the way. Dailies don't count. You're not allowed to be like, I'm not available, I'm playing the nightly. No fucking way. Bracelet event or better.
Okay, but I've never entered a 10K that I didn't satellite my way into, so I definitely have to play a few satellites. So you can, maybe I won't play a daily, but you got to give me a few satty bullets to try to get into the main.
I would like to highlight this has, and again, woe is me, did derail some of my plans. For example, to enter my first ever seniors tournament, to enter the Battle of the Ages tournament. So for the second year in a row, I guess I am going to be playing mostly the $200, $400 daily deep stacks, because we might have the odd day off, Joe, but I don't think there's anything more than like two consecutive days. So every event that has a day two, it is no point in entering.
I guess, I mean, look, you and I aren't the type to do this, but if you just so happen to make a day three or something and it happens to be a day we're broadcasting, I'd figure out a way to cover for you.
Yeah,
and that would be to get to beg Caitlin to do it. But,
sure.
I'd be there. It'd be my honor. I like to bust your balls about how you're always volunteering me to do extra work for no more money. But I actually am just so honored that I'm your colleagues, baby.
You are.
Yeah.
Well, look, you're in.
I'm also under no delusions, right? I'm on the books as a commentator. I'm not on the books to play poker. So I'm going to put the streams before the tournaments. There will still be one World Series event I can play this summer. A, because we have a day off, and B, because it involves handing over the reins to another person, and that's the tag team event. The tag team event is happening. Everything else, probably not.
Are y'all playing it together?
Skinny is my partner for the tag team event. Not
oh,
Joey.
Hell yeah.
Sorry.
Let's go Skinny. Joey, who are you playing with?
Dave Tuckman asked me last night if I would be his tag team partner. I'm not convinced. I feel like I might be working those days, though. There's been conflicting scheduling about various stuff. So, I don't know. Those dates were thrown out to me originally by the folks over at Poker Go. So, if I can play the tag team, I'll play it with Tuckman.
Dude, you
He's
only
the only
have to
person
play
who
one
asked.
Orbit.
Yeah, fine. Great.
Yeah,
but then
your tag team partner is locked in with no bathroom breaks. There are no breaks because it's like a tag out tag team event.
Well, I could tag in for like a couple of or an orbit or whatever I have to do, I guess, to give him a break every once in a while. James can handle it in the booth for.
Yeah.
I mean, look, how long will it take me to go sit down, dust off our entire team stack, and then get back to the booth? Not very long.
Yeah. Just very quickly, Joe, to pick up on the conversation we had last week, I went to see Mission Impossible at the cinema. Liked it, but didn't love it. I do think that the franchise peaked with Fallout. The last two movies were okay, but number one, they're both ridiculously overlong. A Mission Impossible movie does not need to be 3 hours long. Secondly, I've just found the premise a little bit hokey, and it really pushes. I know that all of the movies have really pushed the envelope regarding believability and suspension of disbelief, I guess. But this one really, really pushes it. And I just didn't feel it was a great conclusion to Tom Cruise's tenure. I can easily believe he would do another one because he's given himself an out. And there's also, they've tried to retcon a lot of stuff to like the previous movies. Some of which
they tried to specter it.
And some of it really doesn't work. There's some callbacks that I liked and some which I really, really hated. But I can't go into details because I don't want to do spoilers for people.
Luckily, I'm so dumb and don't remember all the other movies that half the references will be lost on me anyway. So it won't really matter.
Okay.
I've been nervous to see that movie because it's like artificial intelligence that's like learning to outsmart humans. Isn't that like actually on the horizon for us? And you're saying it's unbelievable, but I keep reading these articles.
No,
I think
the
unbelievable part is
no.
I think that part that's unbelievable is that we win.
Or that a 60-year-old man can do all these things.
Yes.
That there are. What I will say is there are a couple of set pieces. One particular action sequence towards the end of the movie that almost had me vomiting in terms of just how tense it is, and knowing that this 60-year-old guy who seems determined to kill himself on screen is doing that himself, is doing his own stunts.
Oh, he would love it. He would love dying. Making an Mission Impossible movie, that would be the absolute best way for him to go.
It's insane.
Yeah, because he's been so excited to age and get older, you can tell.
Yeah. So I binged the rehearsal season two. I mean, I thought it was outstanding. I mean, there's just no other TV show like it. It's just an amazing concept, just so brilliantly executed. Mountainhead, the new Jesse Armstrong film on Netflix.
Oh, yeah. What?
Nah. Interesting premise. Nah,
to be honest.
Some good dialogue. Feels like a stage play. Nothing cinematic about it at all. Just a lot of people talking. And again, spirals. It just doesn't go in the direction you think it's going to go in. And I found it a big disappointment. But nothing was more disappointing to me than season four of Hacks.
What an outrageous take.
I started getting pretty irritated by Hacks last season. I just thought it lost all of its charm, all of caring about either of the characters. I don't even think I finished last season. I thought season two was a perfect ending, did not need more Hacks. I understand. Look, I want people to work. I work in the entertainment industry. I know why you keep going on a show, but I just couldn't root for anyone anymore about halfway through last season. It was just so, everyone's just so annoying. I'm not surprised that season four is a bore.
I don't disagree with you about the fact that season three was unnecessary, quote unquote, but I thought it was a decent continuation and I really liked the conclusion of season three. Season four was a very up and down season, but the finale, the characters behave in such a way, there are decisions or things that they do that are so out of keeping with how they've been established as personalities that I just like, I'm done. I'm sorry. You're not staying true to the characters anymore. I was very disappointed with it.
Caitlin, counterpoint.
I really enjoyed it. The only part I didn't like was just how easy it was for them to become number one, the number one network talk show, and how they were just like, oh, you know, they got a little gossipy. They did a little like E channel, like they had on the Dancing Mom, and they were little, and then all of a sudden they went straight to the top. That was the one part that I was like, well, that's kind of what the Tonight Show is right now. Like that's kind of already what the landscape is. Like Chelsea Handler already did that. So I wish they had gotten a little more creative with that. I thought it was really fun. The Dance Mom character that they had this like venerated serious actress come in and play. And
I hated that subplot, by the way. I found the whole Dance Mom thing completely annoying. And one of the problems I found with the season is
That was the funniest scene in the season when they're like trying to get her awake. That between Jimmy and I think Meg Stalter is so funny. I can't wait to see what she does in her career. I got to see her live in Austin, and she's just such a unique.
And again, I love Jimmy and Kayla as characters, but they didn't know what to do with them this season, and that was a problem. So here's a question for you, Caitlin, and this is going to be a spoiler for anyone who hasn't seen season four of Hacks. Do you believe for one second that Deborah would willingly quit the show that she's worked her entire life to get to set because they wanted her to fire Ava? Do you really believe that she would do that? Because to me, that was completely out of sync with her character.
I think that that's fair, but I think the journey of season four was showing that she had changed and that Ava had changed her and that she and Ava had a relationship that not even her and her daughter or her and her ex had, and that she wasn't going to go back on it after the scene at the beach. Like that scene was really impactful after
Jean Smart.
She goes in the water and then they're sitting by the towel under the heat. Like I thought that was a really impactful scene. I don't know. I think you're being a little hard on it. I mean, maybe I just like it because it's like female centric characters and I thought it was laugh out loud funny. The addition of Robbie. Robbie is on the come up right now. She's the one who played the new assistant character that was like a Hasidic Jew who I think she's a really unique. She was really good on the John Mulaney show, which the John Mulaney show, Everybody's Live, has been pretty bad for the most part because it's truly live and it's all of these A-list celebrities that are not comfortable doing improv. And so it's like really stilted and whatever. But she had a bang up appearance on that show. She was laugh out loud funny for the duration of her appearance. So I'm excited to see these like new young alternative talents emerging from the show. But I mean, I get your criticism in the sense of like the characters are changing in ways that, you know, you've set up that they wouldn't. So I think that's fair.
I guess they didn't sell a good enough job of the fact that they had formed this genuine bond, that in any way that she had changed as a person or that their relationship had deepened. I didn't get that.
I think because of the way every other season is structured where you think she's changed and then by the end she hasn't.
Correct.
And, you know, she reverts to her selfish self at some point. and that all of a sudden you're like, oh, nope, but this time it's real. I could see why that might not ring true.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it was harder for me to watch Ava blackmail her at the beginning of the season and have like the Ava character be so ruthless
and awful. That I liked because that's how season three concluded, right? Which was, she had learned from Deborah. It's like, I'm going to play you at your own game because this is the only way that I can actually get business done with you. It's the only way that we can actually work together is if I'm more like you. I thought that was more believable than Deborah coming around after, you know, being a pretty ruthless person and a very egotistical, self-centered person for as many years as she's been in the business. But yeah, anywho.
I'll accept it.
All right. Well, welcome to poker and hacks in the ears. I think it's the longest we've ever talked about anything on this show, but I'm here for it. We do, unfortunately, have to pivot to the world of online poker and close out Scoop 2025 right meow.
Yes, it's finally over. The Spring Championship of Online Poker concluded on Monday. That means we have all the results. We know who won Player of the Series. We know who took down the Scoop League. When I say we, I mean him. He's got the looks. He's got the brains. He's Howard Swains. Howard Swains, welcome.
Hello, hello. How you doing?
Howard, do you really know all that stuff?
I'll have forgotten it by tomorrow, but I do right now, yeah.
Our final conversation with our Scoop correspondent, our final conversation for Scoop 2025. We'll talk again, Howard. I guess we should start by putting a bow on the series stats, right? The headline numbers. Tell us how the series performed. Above expectation, below expectation. Were guarantees smashed?
Guarantees were smashed, yes. We beat them quite comfortably, actually. So there were 380 tournaments, as we know, they all played out. That hasn't always been the case. We've had a few that got cancelled in the past, but this time they all got played out. We actually was quite good. But on the last night, we beat 1 million entries. So we got to 1,002,703. Prize pools also just went over $70 million on the last night, and winners' prizes went over $10 million on the last night as well. So, yeah, kind of some nice round numbers there. So, yeah, guarantees comfortably beaten.
Howard, was there any discernible difference having the main event not happen at the end? Did that cause any weird things with Player of the Series or anything numbers wise, or was it still pretty much the same?
Pretty much the same. I mean, I think obviously it was the right decision because everyone would have gone to Vegas, right, for the World Series. So if we'd have had it right at the end, there'd have been a lot of people either in transit or they'd have been in the States. Yeah. You know, so that was obviously played into it. So I think it felt a bit weird, but it was probably the right decision. And there was no sort of notable dips. I mean, the guarantees were broken on the main events of the Hold'em. There was one overlay in the PLO, but other than that, no, it was all good.
This is the weird butterfly effect, right? Because Easter was later this year because Easter moves in the calendar every year. So the Irish Open was later. That meant Monte Carlo got pushed back. That was later than normal, which resulted in Scoop starting later than normal, which resulted in this problem where the final weekend of the series overlapped with the World Series, hence the moving of the main events. I'm hoping that next year, I haven't looked when Easter is taking place next year. Hopefully this is a one-off because, as I've said repeatedly, I don't like it. It should end with the main event. That's how it should go, Howard. That's how it's gone since 2009. And I know because you're a huge nerd and you've been doing this job for far too many years. You've been tracking all the stats since 2009.
I have. How sad is that? It's not as sad as knowing when Easter is. I don't actually ever know when Easter is. People say, oh, Easter's late this year.
And it's like, when Christ died for our sins.
I was going to say, you guys are really pissing off the Christians right now.
But when is it supposed to be? I never know. Like,
it's something to do with the moon cycle. Seriously, it's related to the moon cycle.
It's, yeah. It has to do with the equinox or something,
that's
right?
That's it. The vernal
this is the
equinox.
First time it's actually had any impact on my life. Yeah, so if that's the answer, if that's the reason, then fair enough. So do you want these all-time scoop stats?
Yes, please.
What you're leading into, right? So yeah, over those years we've been following this, we've had 3,681 tournaments. Now, I've got to make sure I get the commas in the right place here. So entries, we've had 15,950 entries. 50,952,000 entries. Prize pools are at 1 billion, 1.485 billion, and winners have taken $227 million. So, it's been going quite a long time. They're obviously kind of like ludicrous numbers, don't really mean very much, but they're all there on my screen, and that's you now have them.
But they're ridiculously massive numbers, and people like big numbers. When you start talking about more than a billion in prize money, it sounds impressive.
Yeah, it was good when we actually hit that billion, however many years ago it was now. But yeah, we're coming up to 1.5 billion. That'll probably tick over to 1.5 billion next year.
We got to catch up to that sign at McDonald's eventually. Billions and billions served.
Yeah, next year we're trying to catch up to cigarette deaths per year.
Okay, so just drawing a line under everything, and I guess all of the kind of key story points that we've been touching on since the start of the series, multiple champs, people who won more than one scoop trophy this series. What was the final number?
So we had 1 5-time champion, Simon Mattson. We had 2 4-time champions, Renan Brushy and Faust. We had 2 3-time champions. That was Diego Coelho and High Risk H Reward. And then 23 2-time champions. So in all, that's 28 multiple champions. 23 won two, and then the others won more than that. So yeah, that's pretty good. I mean, that actually, in the past, we've had sort of similar numbers. We have had one 5-timer before, but most of the time, you know, we sort of top out at 4-time winners for the series.
So no one's ever won more than 5 titles in a single series. See, Darwin basically equaled the record.
Yeah, that's right. We have in W Coop, I believe, but in Scoop, that is equaling the record. Correct. Yeah.
And I think, did you say he's now got more titles than Benny Glaser? Is he the all-time winningest player in Scoop?
Oops. Yeah, he's come from behind and gone right into the lead. So he has 14, which is 3 clear of Nicholas Astett, Lena 900, Benny Glaser and Premove. They all have 11. So Benny missed out to this year, but obviously went to Vegas and won a tournament immediately there. So he got a bracelet. But
we're not playing any violins for Benny Glaser right now. Screw him.
I mean, he's won a bracelet here already, too.
Exactly.
So.
Yeah, so it's funny, he didn't win a W Coupe for the first time in forever last autumn, and then he hasn't won a scoop for the first time in forever this time. But yeah, he's still got 11, so pretty good. But Simon Mattson is now 3 clear of all the others as the all-time winners list.
Very impressive. So player of the series, and this was a weird one, right? Normally goes down to the wire, but I think you've been saying for a couple of weeks now, pretty much a lock because of the phenomenal performance of the King of Albania.
Yeah, I mean, these have been the most bonkers stats of the entire season, haven't they? Like these are mad. So he in the end won by like nearly 800 points. 3,795 points this player got ahead of Faust, who got 3,090. So 700 points. Yeah, but it
I
was,
mean 3,090 might have been enough to win it in previous years, right?
Yeah, that in itself was 100 points clear of the third place player. You know, and in the past, we've, you know, it, like I said once before, it's usually been sort of like 10 points, 5 points sometimes, and it's been really close. So, I mean, this was an absolute domination. They cashed in 194 tournaments, made 22 finals, and won 2 titles and runner-up 3 times. And the player of the series just wasn't even close. They, you know, it was split this year into week 1, week 2, and week 3. They podium finished in every category every week, which wow. is absurd, you know. So in week 1, they finished first in the medium and first in the high. In week 2, they finished second in the low, first in the medium and second in the high. Week 3, they finished second in the low, equal first in the high. And then, you know, and they cashed in all the other ones as well, all the ones I missed out there. So they got the 15K bonus. And in total from Player of the Year, they got $37,000 just in bonus prizes from the Player of the Series races. matches, which is just ridiculous.
And it was 380 total tournaments, right, Howard, in Scoop this year?
That's right, yeah.
194 caches. That's more than a 50% cash rate.
Yeah, I know. We're nuts, huh? It doesn't. It's just beggar's belief, really. I mean, I've never seen anything like it.
Incredible performance. Okay, before you say anything, Howard, Joe, Caitlin, have either of you seen the result of the Scoop League? Be honest.
Yeah.
You have?
I've seen it, yeah.
Joe, have you seen it?
No.
Okay, do you think it was Spraggy or do you think it was Kelvin Kerber?
Oh, wow. Okay, so Spraggy was way ahead because of King. If I'm going to look.
Remember the last time we checked in? The last time we checked in, Kelvin has moved ahead of Spraggy.
It is very on brand for Spraggy to have had a massive lead and then blow it and then not come close at the end and to not even clap back after losing the lead. So I'm going to say Kelvin Kerber won the league.
Okay, well, you're not wrong in the sense that Spraggy didn't win, but Howard, who did actually win the Scoop League?
Congratulations, Seb Huber.
This is absurd. Wow! We thought it was a two-horse race, and then Peace and Love just came up from third, right?
Man, Peace and Love. Seb is like kind of criminally underrated. I hope that he starts getting like a little bit more of the attention he deserves because, Howard, I'm sure you know, he won a Scoop this year at least.
Yep.
Which puts him as one of two team pros to win a Scoop this year.
Kelvin and Tonka both won as well, so three of them won.
Is Kelvin a team pro?
No.
Oh, sorry. He was a captain, wasn't he? He's a team captain, but not a team pro, correct.
Yeah. Well, anyway, yeah, Seb Huber, good job.
Yeah. So, yeah, he won, but it was thanks, actually, the last week. So Faust ended up with four titles. He was on Seb's team. But then Blazer Jav won two titles really late on.
Ah.
You know, remember Blaz, we've talked about him before. He's a really, really good player, one of the real top prospects. And he's now won two Scoop titles in the past 3 years. So he's gone to six in 3 years, which is pretty, pretty good for him. Yeah, but Seb's team was excellent. He had Faust and then he had Blazer Jav. He had Premove. He had Talal, who came back from his overseas trip and won, and Seb himself won a title. The only player actually didn't win a title on his team was Wistern, but Wistern's won in the past, I believe. So yeah, Seb got 8,300 and Kelvin got 7,700 points.
So Spraggy was eventually relegated to third place.
Yeah, he pulled a Knicks.
Yeah.
Was that too American a reference? Yeah.
No, he did. Yeah, because he was living on the coattails of King, who ended up with two titles, and Patrick Leonard got two titles, but then his other players didn't do very much for him at all, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
And Spraggy himself sort of whiffed it a bit.
So Chris, our producer, has reminded me that when Seb was a guest on the podcast last year, he says he loves leaderboard challenges. He won the WCOOP League last year, right? So he's two for two as a team captain and clearly is good at drafting players.
Yeah, he seems to understand something a bit like the others don't. I mean, he just got a really good team. I mean, you could tell on paper it was a brilliant team and it delivered as well.
Yeah. Okay.
He should have drafted his wife. Marley made like four final tables. My girl killed it at Scoop.
That's an epic fail, Spraggy. You deserve to lose for that alone. last but by no means least, Howard, the question that we all want the answer to, did Brazil beat their own record? When we left you last week, I think they were on 81 and the target was 89 to tie the record, 90 to beat it. How many trophies did Brazilian players win during Scoop 2025?
Yeah, they crushed it. 101.
They went to triple digits?
Holy shit.
Most ever. I actually sort of double took myself when I did the sort of final calculations. But yeah, 101, that was massive. The second place was Austria with 35. So it's like an absolute crushing. Yeah. UK was in third place. But yeah, that's going to be a real tough one to match. But then again, I probably say that every year and they go and do beat it again. So we'll see. 41 countries won events this time. We had first ever wins for Cambodia and Paraguay. I always like to track the new country. So yeah, Cambodia and Paraguay are our first time champions this time.
Do you think if I moved to Brazil and played Scoop that I could somehow bring their numbers down? It doesn't really work like that, does it?
Worth a try. No.
We don't offset it against the number of Brazilians who didn't win or didn't
who
cast.
Don't win. Damn
yeah,
it.
Exactly. I was thinking of getting you a gift for your hard work on Scoop Howard, and it's one of those kind of custom dot matrix readouts that you could put in your home office, which is days to WCOOP. So you could have like a countdown clock in front of you. Because I guess that's when we'll next catch up.
Yeah, it's a lovely thought, James, but I already scratched them in the wall like I'm in a prison cell. I scratch the days away. But yeah, thanks very much. No, well, you're welcome, obviously. Yeah, enjoy this. So I will no doubt speak to you again in WCOOP time.
See you for WCOOP, Howard.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Well, the World Championship of Online Poker is still a few months away. Right now, and for the next, 6 weeks? The poker community has its sights set on live poker, specifically Vegas, even more specifically, the World Series of Poker 2025. And joining us to preview this year's WSOP is a bracelet winner, commentator, and TV exec. And to be clear, I'm talking about one person. He is director of programming at PokerGo. He's one of the voices of their live coverage of the World Series. Brent Hanks, welcome to Poker in the Ears.
Wow. I love being, this is fantastic. What an intro. Those are the kindest, most heartfelt words I think that anyone's ever said, and none of it could be true.
Well, a couple of years ago, we had Jeff on the podcast, and I felt because we were getting an upgrade that I really needed to kind of put you on the pedestal you deserve.
Two of your biggest fans are on this show right now. Brent, I am a huge fan of yours. I know this is probably not even really a compliment. I think everything you say is hilarious, even when you're trying to be serious. And Caitlin thinks you're hot as shit.
Yeah, I gave you your flowers on being one of the hotter men in poker. Me and my girlfriends have discussed this at length. I don't know if I've ever told you. It came up because someone it was the Solve for Why guys were asking us if we thought Jeff or Brent was hotter, and they thought we were going to slam dunk Jeff Platt. And like, no disrespect to Jeff, he's a very pretty man, but we were like, we're taking Brent.
Well, I, again, no one has ever done that before. So I'm blushing. I am blushing.
Brent, welcome to being a sex symbol. As a guy who's been here for many years, let me tell you, it does have its perks. I'll explain to you the ins and outs of it off the air. Don't worry.
Oh, please do.
Thank you for taking the time to be with us, Brent, because I know you're in the thick of it already. The World Series is underway. PokerGo's coverage has already started. Opening, though, I want to touch on the bracelet win, right? I mean, what does the World Series mean to you? Because I guess you came to it first as a player and then transitioned into, for want of a better phrase, industry role?
Yeah, it means a lot. I moved to Las Vegas in end of 2007, very end of the year, December. And right away, in fact, my biggest career online win was on PokerStars. It was the Sunday Million, and it used to be a $500 buy-in version. They'd run it once a month, which I don't believe it.
No.
So my first weekend in Las Vegas living here, I won the Sunday Million. And then after that, I just started playing more and more and more poker. And then eventually it was the World Series bracelet, which was for me at the time, the bucket list type item. So winning that was spectacular. Yeah, I felt like, okay, now I'm done. I don't have to do anything anymore. I'm just going to, I guess I retire now. But it turns out, you know, that wasn't nearly enough money to retire. Now I have a real job. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Brent, I'm going to confess something. I know Caitlin just confessed something. Up until very recently, I thought you were one of the Hinkle brothers. So, yeah. So, I don't know. I just thought you were Brent Hinkle for a long time. So, I just wanted to confess that now while I can.
He does
I mean,
have
it makes
the same
sense.
Shaped head.
Same shaped head. They all have bracelets. Mm-hmm. So, it kind of made. I thought you were the least successful of the Hinkle brothers. What I do want to know, though, is I think you're about to lead into what is it like? You're one of the most connected people in poker now. Like your Rolodex, mine's like kind of impressive. Yours is out of this world. So I just want to know, like, you just seem to be like the utility guy at PokerGo. How would you describe your job?
I think utility is a good word for all of that. But I don't know what it is. For me, it's always been about community and relationships and just meeting people, getting to know people, and then maintaining those relationships and not screwing it all up.
Yeah.
So it's just, I think it's trust and my ability from both a player perspective and my past life, having gotten to know and becoming great friends with so many of today's top pros, including, you know, one of your top ambassadors with Jason Kuhn. So it's from the high roller scene, Kuhn, Shulman, my current very good friend and past Stars ambassador, Jason Mercier, who's very not involved with poker, but sort of is. There's people all over the map that are tied to this industry. And then that has really just led to connections outside of poker, you know, leading into sports and celebrities. Nick Wright is a great example from sports and FS1. I just so happen to be a diehard Buffalo Bills fan. He's a diehard Kansas City Chiefs fan. And poker is where we met in the middle, and that's how we connected. So we have a great friendship. We stay in touch all the time and bust each other's, you know, chops, so to speak. And I don't know what it is, but really for me, the relationships and that sense of community where I feel that poker, this is my world. And I want everyone I know to come join this world, be a part of this world. So to me, that means a lot. And I think it's really just about keeping ties and making sure that you've got great trusted relationships with everybody.
As someone who's been there, seen it, done it, why on earth do you want to work in an official capacity and be a commentator and effectively try and do two jobs?
It's a good question. And frankly, it was one I was not prepared for. I was kind of thrown into commentary as, oh, crap, you know, Ali Najad is sick. Can you jump in? And my first ever show was Poker After Dark, which, by the way, you can't find that anywhere. They've completely erased.
I have some shows that have been wiped off the face of the
planet.
Yeah,
it's in the same vault with my appearance on No Gamble, No Future. They're in the same dingy basement, hidden away from eyes together.
So it kind of happened organically where I was doing more and more shows, and then, you know, Jeff Platt entered the fold right around 2017, 2018. We auditioned together. He knew it was a real audition. For me, I had no clue. I just thought it was hey, will you sit with this guy and talk with him? He's going to be play-by-play.
My audition was for Poker Stars. Yeah. I didn't, it was like an Ender's Game situation. I was like, yeah, sure, I'll come fuck around for a little while. Why not?
Yeah. So, and then the rest just kind of worked itself out. Started doing more and more shows. And, you know, somehow, the more shows I've done, I've also gotten really busy on the business side.
Yeah.
So for Poker Go and all the partnerships and relationships and whatever we got going on over there, I'm still going up this direction while I'm also doing as many shows as I can possibly do, or however many shows Dan Gotti and Maury want me to do. But it's busy. I like being busy. And again, poker's my life. It doesn't matter if I'm playing or if I'm on the business side or the commentary side. I just always want to be doing it and involved in some way, shape, or form.
Well, you're involved, buddy. Trust me. You have been a beacon of hope, a beacon of light during this very uncertain time we've been having. So I just want to say thank you for your patience. And you've got to be a patient fellow to deal with all the high rollers and all the quote-unquote talent that you deal with, Brent. So it takes a certain kind of, demeanor, a bedside manner, that we're all big fans of here. Brent, we were hoping that you could shed some light on what exactly is going on this summer between us and you, us being Poker Stars and you being Poker Go.
Well, I would love to shed a little bit of light on that. As you guys are all aware, and this is a big day for Poker Star and for Poker Go, we are continuing to evolve the partnership and the relationship that we have between the brands. And now, most notably, that is all about the World Series of Poker. Poker Stars is front and center. You're a part of every single broadcast. You guys are going to be on the mics doing a bunch of shows. I think that this is sort of, I don't know, one of the biggest accomplishments that I've been a part of is seeing the behemoth, the massive brand Poker Stars collaborate, work with Poker Go, and present the World Series of Poker to the world. To see your brand all over WSOP, it's a little bizarre.
Yes, it is. I'm not going to lie. We acknowledged that at the start of the show. Never thought in a million years it would happen.
Yeah, so it's funny how contracts and legal things work, because if it wasn't for the way that PokerGo had the deal carved out as far as the broadcast and distribution, then I don't think PokerStars would have seen the light of day having any hands on WSOP. But hey, that's why we love legal teams. We'll never say a bad thing about
them. Yeah. And I guess that's a choice of viewing, right? Because Joe and I will be handling proceedings on the PokerStars YouTube and Twitch channels, and then there'll be the traditional PokerGo coverage on your YouTube channel.
That's correct, yeah. And it was sort of a fly-by-the-seat-of-our-pants sort of arrangement, right? I mean, you guys know this. It was, what the hell are we doing this summer? And finally, you know, our team and the lovely Francine, you know, we got it all together. And we said, you know what? PokerStars, their brand, their voices, they're going to be on their own YouTube channel. This is going to look and sound and feel like a PokerStars production. And that's exactly what the goal and what the intent is and what it will become. If you don't want to hear, of course, you guys, James and Staves, you can come over to the PokerGo side and you'll have some idiot like me, or you'll have Jeff Platt. So
the point is you'll be spoiled for choice for idiots. No matter where you turn, there will be an idiot that you can listen to.
No matter what. Yeah, there's no getting away from us. And the best part is we'll be texting during the show. You'll be doing your thing. And we'll be texting back and forth, and it'll be great.
So I'm sure you get this as well, Brent, on some of your live streams. We often get people asking chat, like, is there an alternative commentary stream if people aren't fans? On this occasion, we can say yes. I guarantee you there'll be someone asking for a third option.
Yeah.
And that person is Caitlin.
Surprise! Yeah.
So... the highlights, because there's so many great events that we're going to be covering. We've got the final 2 days of the 100K High Roller, the final 2 days of the 50K Poker Players Championship, and then 7 days of coverage of the 10K World Series of Poker main event. That's all 4 day 1s, both day 2s and day 3. Now, I did say at the start of the show that because this has been touch and go, because this has been like, is it going to happen for a long time? We couldn't put our lives on pause. So I know there's a few days, Joe, when you're going to be away. I think you've got some stand-up gigs.
Yeah, I got to go make Vegas. $300 over 5 days in St. Louis, June 12th through 15th, if anyone's around. I got to pick up $40 a show out in the Midwest.
And I have a vacation booked across the day ones of the main event. So there are going to be some days that we miss, but we'll be there at the beginning, there at the end for the conclusion. And just to highlight, Brent, and this works for you guys, once we finish streaming day 3 of the main event, that's when everything moves over to PokerGo's subscription service, right?
Yeah, that's right. There's a handful of events that are going to be for our the PokerGo loyal subscribers.
Right.
They got to pay for something. You know, we can't just put it all.
Brent, how are we doing on getting me that promo code, right? If I'm going to send a bunch of people to sign up for PokerGo paywall, I want to get a little fucking Skrilla coming my way. Can we use sign up code?
Deal. You know, they use code STAPES to sign up for PokerGo, and then you get a little kickback. You know, I think
perfect.
That's right. We'll get
perfect.
That
going. I want to see Carrie's name on that check. For $8 that I'm going to get.
I'm going to say it will be a race between that check and the residuals that Matt Savage gets for Lucky You in terms of actual cash value. So here is a hashtag fun fact. The first year that there was live streaming of Final Tables at the World Series was 2010. And it was on ESPN3. Which was effectively their web portal. And I was the lead commentator on those streams. And one of the events I remember was the 25K Six Max. And here we are, 15 years later, it's all come full circle.
That's pretty weird.
I don't even remember ESPN 3. I know there's the, you know, ESPN 2. What was the Ocho? Didn't they have something?
That was from the movie Dodgeball.
That was made up for a movie, but they did end up. Now they actually lean into that, and when they are doing weird sports on ESPN, they call it the Ocho. But yes, it's originally.
Let's bring the Ocho back. Yeah. Okay. This will work.
I mean, I do this bit in my act about how poker is at ESPN is only slightly less well regarded than the Nathan's hot dog eating contest. Like that is sort of the hierarchy of novelty sports. It goes hot dogs, then poker.
Yeah. Yeah, although I think Cornhole may have just passed us.
Cornhole's way above both of those.
Left ahead.
I mean, we're decades behind pickleball right now. We got a long way to go.
We're just not as athletic as darts, but we're trying.
So I did a stream already, James. I wanted to warn you about this. Now, so I was in contact. It was my first stream on the Poker Go channel yesterday. And I'm texting with Brent, who I'm now referring to as the Poker Go fat cat, because when he sends me messages, I deliver them the way I used to do the old Poker Stars fact. We got to get the likes on this stream up or it's canceled. And so I was like, hey, Brent, am I doing a terrible job or is your chat really fucking toxic? And he was like, go ahead, Brent, you can answer that question.
No, the reality is that it's extremely toxic. And the way that we've bred these creatures, these animals on all of our shows. But I think, and I should have warned you about this, Stapes, when Jeff and I do a bunch of these shows or whoever the tandems are, we actually love the trolls and we root for them. We'll call them out on air and we'll say, you got to do better. We'll read the best ones out loud. In fact, those are oftentimes the only comments we read are the most negative ones. And what we've discovered, that's how you win them over. They become fans. But yeah, they can't troll you anymore because you're reading their comment on air and it's like, oh my God, these guys are great. Yeah.
That was music to my ears because that is my modus operandi as well. And I was afraid that I would read a couple and you'd be like, hey man, like don't give the trolls so much attention. Like, can we just focus on the poker? And you were like, nah, man, go for it. Like, have at it. Do whatever you want. Annihilate them. And I was like, I feel at home here.
Yeah, it's the way it should be. And oftentimes, too, I mean, you guys know this. You've done millions of shows. When they're live and they're long, shit is boring.
Yes.
You can't sit there and call the hands, call the action, do this, do the ad read, do this. I mean, otherwise, it is horrible. Combine that with all the tankers. Jeff and I started the first broadcast of the summer. Okay, let me look back. May 31st, it was the 5K No Limit Hold'em final table. I
watched some of that.
Tanking at this level before, and I was on blast. The players, I didn't care. I was calling them out. The chat was in support, and you could see it in the chat somehow. I mean, the chat was hating this show, but yet the audience was getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and they joined forces. We joined forces with them. They were with us, and we were just calling the shit out left and right. Yeah, it's just how it is with poker.
So serious question on this, Brent, actually, because I figured this would be a big talking point this summer. Joe, didn't I flag to you how slow the pace of play was, how egregious some of the tanking was on that stream? Because I watched some of it on the weekend.
You did, and I saw Jeff reply to people saying, like, yeah, it sucks for us too. So it seems like everybody is on the same page about the pace of play.
Considering that the World Series is trying to move forward in terms of rule changes, right? We had the change this year with no electronic devices when you get down to the final three tables. How far away are we from shot clocks in World Series events? Because to me, I don't understand how they're not already a thing.
So I'll jump on that real quick. They actually are a thing in the high roller, bigger buy-in events. The shot clocks play. Where they're lacking, and Daniel Negreanu, by the way, has been very outspoken about this, it's these middling tiers. It's the 2500s, even the 1Ks, the 5Ks. But it's at that level, that price point, with around 5K, where this becomes a very large problem. That's where players are quite good, right? It's a lot of money to buy in. Fields are still pretty big. And they're taking full advantage of the situation that it's unlimited tanking. They're keeping an eye on the clock over here. They're strategically, elongating their decision making, fold, just to let the clock tick and tick and tick. And it's infuriating. So maybe an oversight, maybe an adjustment will be made throughout the course of the summer. I think a reasonable solution would be you get down to the final three tables, you insert the shot clock.
Correct.
I mean, let it be pain and torture along the way. But at least when you get to the final three tables and you're moving towards a broadcast, you have to have a shot clock in place. One other fine note there, the 1K is a good example that we just aired the other night as well, the 1K Mystery Million. You didn't need one there. These guys were blasters. They were not thinking about anything other than the two cards they had in front of them. They weren't about ICM and should I fold this and should I do that. They were out there having a great time playing for life-changing money. you know, talking about the bounties they scored along the way, friends and family celebrating, hooting and hollering. It was a different atmosphere. So it's really those mid-tiers, the 5K level, something like that, where you have to have a shot clock and you at least need to put it in deep where it matters.
For sure.
I wanted to ask you about Martin Cabrill, who's sort of like the face of tanking to gain an advantage. He's gotten a lot of attention so far this series. Do you have a take on Martin Cabrill? Is he good for poker? Is he bad for poker? Good influence?
He's a great example and so polarizing. I will say his antics, I think, are so different than the traditional silent layer up and just takes, you know, 3 minutes for every no decision, right? Martin, there's a method to that madness. And to me, that's very he's running his yap. He's doing all these physical motions. He's standing up, you know, he's doing weird things with the cards. He is intentionally trying to be a mosquito at all times, the most annoying pest on the planet. And I think for me personally, I get entertained.
I love
when
it.
I see other people.
We need more villains.
You're right. You know, this sort of villain type role. He is the epitome of a villain. He is the ultimate villain in poker. He and this other kid who I think is an absolute superstar in the making, this Tyler Montoya. I don't know if you saw the kid who pulled the $1 million bounty, who looks like Patrick Mahomes with the blonde hair, one of the most arrogant sons of bitches you'll ever come across. He's 23, 24 years old, and he knows that he's a star. In his mind, he is the star, and he's such a heel, he's embracing it. So, you know, these villains, these heels, we need them in poker. I think Caprell's a great example. There's a fine line. Don't be unethical.
Yeah.
You know, if you're marking cards and all that, obviously you got to go. But I think they reviewed the tape, and that wasn't a thing. They didn't discover it. But my take on Cabrill is I'm okay to an extent. In fact, if he's at a table, I'm excited if I'm on air because I'm going to go after him. The chat's fired up. The players get going, and it's an entertaining show.
Anytime
it's
you've
a
got
a player. No, I mean, anytime we can get those interactions. Like, there was a clip that was doing really well on socials yesterday of Sean Deeb and Eric Wasserman chirping at each other at the bubble, and Eric was like, I'm surprised you can even fit on the banner. And it was just, like, great laugh line. Those moments are so great.
Anytime there's a player who prompts the question, what do you think about so-and-so, or what's your take on this person, you know we're doing something right, because those are exactly the type of personalities that the game needs. So, Joe, you flagged already that you've been part of some of the PokerGo coverage. You've been working on that side. We're going to start our streams. You've been in Vegas since, what, Saturday, Sunday?
Yeah, and so look, quick little congratulations to Daniel Negreanu, who finished second for a bracelet last night. If you watched the stream, you could tell how really desperately he wanted it. He was very frustrated, and it reminded me seeing Daniel, seeing Amanda on the rail. You know, I was very tight with them, you know, when I was getting my start in poker, so I was quite nostalgic being around that. So yeah, we did one stream already. I got to go to a cool WPT party and hang out with Lynn Gill Martin, and Doug Polk was there, and I got Doug to agree to. Now, Poker.org wants me to do a comedy night from the Poker.org lounge this summer. Doug said he's in. Doug said he would do a set. I'm going to try to make it all poker players. So, Caitlin, if you want in for this one before Thunder Valley, I'm going to hit up JJ Lieberman. I'm going to hit up Comedic Gamble. I'm going to hit up Clayton Fletcher. We're going to get all.
Nikki.
If Nikki wants to get in there, yes. We're going to do like a showcase, probably like 7 to 10 minute sets. All of the poker players who do stand up comedy, we're going to get them in this Poker.org thing. James Poker.org wants us to maybe do a summer special of the Poker in the Ears podcast from the Poker.org lounge.
Yeah.
We're going to try to do a comic book signing this summer in the Poker.org lounge. And that's kind of maybe the only thing I've missed about the World Series of Poker is that it is a time where EPT events are EPT events and WPT are WPT events and WSOP. But at the World Series, everybody's here. These are people we've known for years, for decades, whether it be, you know, like Vince Van Patten, who I ran into for the first time in years, or people who work for other companies that we don't really get to see. This sort of everyone all being together for this one time a year is really special. And we got a lot of cool stuff coming up this summer.
For sure. And on the subject of that podcast, I mean, obviously the three of us were talking offline before we started recording today's show. I think we've earmarked a couple of dates that we could potentially do. The key is, I think we should do this as close to the main event as possible and be like a main event preview podcast, and also a chance for us to reflect on the streams that we've done so far. So you'll know if it drops because you're subscribed to the show, right? So you'll get an alert if we do drop an episode during the summer months.
The Poker Go Fat Cat says you better subscribe or this show is canceled.
And we're going to get Spider-Man too.
My final question for the Poker Go Fat Cat. When it's all over, Brent, once the main event is in the books, once the line is drawn under the World Series of Poker, do you get any downtime at all? Or is it on to the next thing? Because obviously you've got No Gamble, No Future. You've got all the other shows that PokerGo is producing. I don't think we can talk about it just yet, but that we might be working again together in August. So I'm guessing you might get like 24 hours off before you're back in the office.
I'll have very little time off. And that other announcement, by the way, I can't wait. I hope your podcast gets to break the news again for the next project that we're working on together. That is going to be massive, absolutely massive. My time off, I'm going to head out to Indiana. My wife's family is from there. Her dad, where she grew up, is on this beautiful lake country club, boat, the works. So I'll be there for about 3 hours, and then I'm going to come back to and get right back to work. But I'm looking forward to a little time off at the end of the summer, and then we're back on the saddle, so to speak.
Well, only 6 weeks of the World Series still to go, and I'll see you out there in the next few hours, Brent, and looking forward to us working together over the course of this year's WSOP.
I can't wait. And Caitlin, please, if you're playing, make some runs so we can get some cameras on you. You know, you got to actually bag some chips, get some cash for the summer.
She's good. She's good now. She's a good player now. Yeah.
Good. So you've been working on the game, harnessing the crowd.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I've been drinking less, so that's working on my game, right?
I'd probably go the other way if I were you. But anyway,
I can do that too.
I appreciate you so much for having me on. I love the show so much and can't wait to see you down there at the Horseshoe.
Well, time to introduce our final super fan of the season. Ben Godbout, welcome to Poker in the Ears.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Ben, let's talk about you to kick things off here. Tell us about yourself.
Yeah, my name's Ben. I'm from Montreal, Canada. 29 years old, very recreational poker player. Work a pretty normal 9-to-5 as a courier. And a new dad to a 7-month-old. So,
congratulations.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Courier, casual poker player. It sounds like we might have a lot in common, Ben, because even though you're considerably younger than I am, the movie The Sandlot, huge part of my childhood. Tell me about what this movie means to you.
Yeah. No, I grew up a huge baseball fan, played baseball all my life. So it was, it came out a few years before I was born, but it was still something we had on the TV every week on the VHS player. So something rough around.
Years before you were born. Well, I got to tell you, Ben, that I've been meaning to rewatch this movie for a long time. I recently exited a relationship. I really wanted to show it to my last girlfriend. We never got around to it. So I watched it by myself the other night, and what a fucking delight this movie is. I think this is a perfect movie. A 10 out of 10. It just brought me back to my childhood, brought me back to official Little League baseball camp when I was a kid. And on days when it rained, we would all crowd under the pavilion and they would wheel out the VHS and the big tube TV and we would watch baseball movies. And it really brought me back to sitting under that pavilion, smelling the rain, those summers running around the neighborhood as a kid with no adult supervision whatsoever, all the shenanigans you would get into. The movie takes place in the 60s, I think, but it could have been any time, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, probably not any further beyond that. But so I just wanted to say thanks because I fucking loved it. It just really was such a delight watching this movie again. Aww. I'm probably going to slaughter you in the quiz. because this is a movie I know like the back of my hand. Like, I don't even think I would have needed to rewatch it. It's just ingrained in my brain from back then. But you seem like a nice guy, so I hope you beat me.
Oh, I appreciate that.
But also, there's no losers per se, Ben, because if Stapes does win, you still get the Poker in the Ears merch, which, let's be honest, is what everyone's really here for. However, should you manage to pull a win, if you can scrape a victory, you do get the $109 bronze power pass, because being a resident of Montreal, you can play real money poker on PokerStars, and that means you're eligible to win the big real money prize.
It's amazing. And Steve, I don't know if I told you, my online PokerStars name is Benny the Jet.
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah, that's from the movie. The kind of the hero of the movie. It goes by Benny the Jet. Awesome.
Cool. So we have 10 questions. You know how it works. 2 points if you don't take the options. 1 point if you take the options. And Caitlin has the scoreboard ready to go. Did you literally do that in the last, 60 seconds?
Yeah.
That's I like the artistry. You've really gone to town on the names there. That's a very good choice of
points. The bar you have for me is really in the basement, isn't it, James?
It's mostly just for looks that we have you, Caitlin. Anything you do above that is kind of a bonus.
Oh, that's
for
so
us.
Flattering for the audio format entertainment that we're doing. Thank you so much, Joe.
You're welcome.
I have the best tits in poker, I'll have you know. I've had handfuls of people tell me that.
Handfuls is a good way of putting it.
So, Ben, to get things back on track, please give me a number between 1 and 10.
Nah, it's always coming 7.
Always coming 7. Okay, the boys have a few nicknames for Babe Ruth. Which is the nickname that Ham uses?
The Great Bambino.
Correct, for 2 points.
Okay, I could be in trouble here.
You wouldn't have known
nice
that?
Nice one.
Did you not even know who Ham was?
No, I knew who Ham was. By the way, they recently did a publicity stunt where the kid who played Ham came out into a minor league ballpark and as his character from The Sandlot, and he ends up, I think he doesn't hit a home run, but they whatever, it's a cute little publicity stunt. Anyway, let's go to question number 8.
Okay. When the rival team come to The Sandlot, they exchange insults. Which is the biggest insult that ends the argument?
This one's for you, Caitlin. You play baseball like a girl.
Correct, for 2 points. The worst insult that you can
possibly
make. That's
the worst thing you could say to anyone on the baseball
diamond. I hate women, and I'm so glad we have a platform to say that here for Poker Stars.
7 Beautiful. And 8 are off the board. You can have any other number, Ben.
No, let's go 10.
Question number 10. Who directed the film?
David Mickey Evans.
Correct for 2 points. Joe?
This is a real nail biter already. Give me question 1, please.
In what year is the film set?
Oh, I do not know this off the top of my head. Oh my goodness. It's got to be the early 60s because the kid at the end, they say he gets lost in the 60s, so it can't be too super late in the 60s. Was there anything relevant?
Are there any historical events?
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to think of. I got to take the choices. I'm going to have to. Yeah.
Was it 1960, 1962, 1965, or 1968?
I'm going to go with, I'm choosing between 1960 and 1962. I'm going to go with 1960 flat.
It was 1962.
Ah, damn it. That's going to be a problem.
That might be a problem. Caitlin, can you please tell us the scores after the second round?
One second, Caitlin. Would you have known that, Ben? Would you have known 1962?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Because then they say 30 years later, or 30 years earlier, it was 1932.
Right. Okay.
Well, at this point in the match, Ben is up 4-2 on Joe.
Okay. Good advantage to have at this stage, Ben. Let's go into the next round then. 2 through 6 and 9 are the questions still available.
We'll go 2.
What was the beast's real name?
That was Hercules.
Correct for 2 points. Joe, 3, 4, 5, 6, or 9?
I'm in big trouble. 3.
Not taking his lucky number 9. What position does Benny put Smalls in at the beginning of the film?
Okay, finally, I'm back on the board here. He puts Scotty in left center field.
He does indeed for 2 points. But you're still trailing as we go into
that pause there worried me. I was like, did I fuck that up somehow? But no, it was just because James doesn't know baseball positions. Okay.
No, it's because I like to build the tension. 4, 5, 6, or 9?
Let's go with 9.
See?
Oh, no!
That's what happens when you don't take your own number, Joe. You get blocked. What causes the boys to be sick on the carnival ride?
Chewing tobacco.
Correct, for 2 points.
What a scene. What an amazing scene.
Available, Joe.
We've all been there.
4, 5, or 6?
I thought that one of the questions was going to be what was the ride they got sick on, so I made sure to memorize that. Let's go with 5, please.
What night of the year did the team get to have their night game?
That is on the 4th of July, because the sky is illuminated with fireworks.
That is
another magical scene in this movie.
Worth 2 points. One question left each. Caitlin, please recap the scores for us.
Ben is ahead, 8 points to 6.
Okay, so basically...
I need Ben to brick this.
Yes, you need Brent to not know the answer to this question. Even if you get this with the options, it's a done deal. Game's over. So, 4 or 6? 6 or 4, Ben?
Let's go 4.
What does Bertram say Squid looks like when he nearly drowned at the pool?
Ooh. I'm pretty sure I know the answer, but I'll take the options.
Okay, does he say he looks like a slimy eel, a wet dog, a dead fish, or a doorstop?
A dead fish.
It is a dead fish. That is going to give you the win. But Joe, I'm going to give you the last question anyway. What was the name of the rival team that challenged the boys?
I believe they were the Tigers.
So basically, had you known the year the film was set, you probably would have at least taken it to the tiebreak. As it stands, the final score, Caitlin?
10-8 in favor of our fan, Ben!
And that means, Ben, you are going to get the $109 bronze power pass plus the Poker in the Ears merch. Thank you so much for volunteering to come on the show. And I think Joe is very happy you selected this as your specialist subject.
Yeah, this is awesome. I mean, you're Canadian. Of course, you're going to be crazy likable. So, you know, we just love you all around.
I appreciate it. Thank you guys so much.
You got it, Ben. All right, my babies, that's just about all the time we've got for this week's show. Can you hear the smile on my face?
I can see the smile on my face. I don't have to hear it.
Right, sorry. Can those of you out there who can't see me hear the smile on my face? Because that is about all the time we've got for this season of Poker in the Ears. Watch the streams. Watch out for the summer special. If you're in Las Vegas this summer, James and I are always down to say hello. We're very busy, but we are down to say hello. If you do want to swing by, you can usually catch us at some point before or after a stream. There you have it. That is it, my babies. That's all the time we've got for this week's show, for this season's shows. Until next time, for James Hardigan and Caitlin Kamesky, I am Joe Stapleton. Smell you later.